Ha'esara begins with an account of the really summation of the life of Sara. And there's a well-known comment of Rashi that I would like to address as well. The pasuk reads, Perek Kaf Gimel, pasuk Aleph, Vayu Ha'esara, as we know, Mea Shana, Vesim Shana, Vesheva Shanim, Shnei Ha'esara. Sarah, her years are 127, the way the Pasuk describes it, 100 years, 20 years, and 7 years. And Rashi comments, L'chach nichtav shana v'chol klal v'klal. So Rashi prefaces that there's something somewhat unusual about the presentation. I mean, there's many numbers and many tallies of years and lifespans that we find in the Torah, we don't normally find them punctuated with the word shana each time. Mea shana, sim shana, sheva shanim. For that matter, it's worthwhile noting that generally speaking, whenever you have a three-digit number in the Torah, it normally starts from the singles. If you compare, for example, the years of Yaakov in the beginning of Vayechi, Vayu Yimei Yaakov, Sheva Arba'im Umeyah Shana, 740 and 100. If it's rounded up to 10, you will find the 100 first. Yitzhak lives 180 years, that's called Meyah Shmonim Shana. But if it's 100 and something something, and it goes down into less than 10, the last one tends to be mentioned first, and the Balabatisha explanation is because if it's down to such particular numbers, the one that tends to be forgotten is the last one. It was at 146, 45, 48. You're rarely likely to wonder, was it 148 or 248 perhaps? And therefore, the one that, in a sense, needs to be most safeguarded as one gets into the particulars is not mentioned first. If it's mentioned first, you won't forget it. 7, 40, and 100. In any case, that's the norm. In Sarah's case, it's reversed, lahavdil, the way we would say it in English, 127. And moreover, says Rashi, the word shana is there to give us pause. And what is the lesson here? Lomar lof, says Rashi, quoting the Medrash, shekol echad nidrash la'atmo. Each one is really to be expounded by itself. And he proceeds to explain how this is so. Firstly, we talk about Mea Shana and Esrim Shana, 100 years and 20 years. Those are being compared. 100 is like 20. Baskuf kebaskaf, lechet. With regards to sin, at the age of 100, like the age of 20. What is the significance of this? What's the yichus of 20 with regards to sin? So Rashi says, Ma baskaf lochata. As surely as at the age of 20 she was without sin, shahari eina bas onjin, because bidei shamayim, no one's punished younger than the age of 20. So 20 represents without sin. Afaskuf belochet. So too at the age of 100. And we assume also then beyond 100, the last 27 years, equally so. And this is the famous position of Chazal, quoted by Rashi here, that whereas Beis Din Shalmata will administer punishment from the age of bar mitzvah, it's not often spoken about at bar mitzvahs, but they do, or can, but Beis Din Shalmala, nonetheless, it's the age is later at 20. And what about the 20 and 7? Sim Shana v'Sheva Shanim, says Rashi, Bas Kaf k'bas Zayin liyofi. The age of 20 was like the age of 7 for beauty. And if we try and put that into a sentence, we would say that in the same way that at the age of 100 she was as free of sin as she was at the age of 20, so too at the age of 20 she was as beautiful as when she was 7. And this last comment of Rashi, or the last part of Rashi's comment, has raised the attention of many mafarshim, because when is a woman more beautiful, when she's 7 years old or when she's 20? I mean, if you're 7 years old, then presumably things only develop, her beauty will develop to the age of 20. So what yichus is it, so to speak, to say when she was 20 years old, she's like she was 7 years old? I'm not sure that most 20-year-old women would consider that to be a compliment, necessarily. We should note, for the sake of Harchovas Ha'inyan, in the interest of full disclosure, that in the Medrash Yalkut Shimoni in Tehillim, in Simen Lamed Zayin, the Girsa is different. And in fact, the equation of 100 to 20 and 20 to 7, the alignment with sin and beauty is reversed. The way that it, the Nusach that we have in the Medrash there is that it's with regards to Yofi we say that she was 100, she was like 20. Okay, that makes more sense. And then moreover, it's with regards to sin we say when she was 20, she was like 7. Again, makes perfect sense. But that's the Girsa in Rashi, but pardon me, in the Yalkut there. But Rashi's source and the Medrash, the one that he chose to quote from, is as we have it, in which case the question would return, what is the meaning of saying that when she was 20, with regards to Yofi, it was like she was 7. We should also note, and important to consult really the sources here, the Medrash, when it discusses Sarah and these equations, 100 to 20 and 20 to 7, begins by quoting the Pasuk in Mishle. And the Pasuk in Mishle states, Yodea Hashem Yemei Temimim. Hashem knows the days of those who are perfect. And the point is, Sarah is one of those who is perfect. These are her days, and these are things that Hashem knows. And then it launches into 20, 100 like 20, 20 like 7. And again, the question that Mefarshei HaMedrash are asking is, how many of these two aspects are things that Hashem knows, that is to say, that only Hashem knows? With regards to sin, one can understand. We can't know whether a person is with sin, without sin, but Hashem knows. Yodea Hashem, Yodei Temimim. However, when it comes to the second aspect of beauty, so by definition, almost, that's something that's known to people. I mean, if a woman is beautiful, people know about it. They look her and then they know. Why then would the Medrash adduce the pasuk of Yodea Hashem Yemei Temimim even with regards to Sarah's beauty? That is also a Medrash question. And the approach that I would like to take this evening is from the Sefer Be'er Yosef, of Yosef Salant, one of the greats of Yerushalayim. And he begins by drawing our attention to another statement of Chazal, this time at the end of Parshas Noach. We referenced it a couple of weeks ago, which discusses the name Yiska. Yiska is another name for Sarah. Avram married Sarah, but Sarah is none other than Yiska. And the question is, why is Sarah called Yiska? And Rashi quotes, and the source is in the Gemara, in Maseches Megillah and Daf Yudalet. The Gemara gives us two explanations. Rashi adds a third. The two explanations in the Gemara are either the word Yiska or Soche means to see. Me'eis kol Soche, Soche in Barafel. Soche means to see. And therefore the first explanation of the Gemara is she's called Yiska because she was Socha Beruach HaKodesh. She would see, she had vision. She had the vision of Ruach HaKodesh. That's the first explanation. Yiska is Socha, Sarah sees. The second explanation, perhaps relating back to our Rashi, is everyone looked at Sarah. Shakol Sochin Biyofya. Everyone would gaze at her beauty. Shakol Sochin Biyofya. So both explanations relate the words Yiska to seeing. It's either Sarah who sees, Ruach HaKodesh, or other people see Sarah because she's so beautiful. Rashi, as we mentioned, although the Gemara's I'd come from the Gemara, Rashi then says that Yiska is also from the expression Nesicha. Nesicha is like a princess. Nesich, Nesicha. Which means Sarah is actually very similar. Sarah is very similar to Yiska in that way. But back to the Gemara. Sarah sees or other people sees. Now, the tendency, the simple, straightforward notion, is to look at these two explanations as distinct. It either means Sarah sees Ruach HaKodesh or other people Sochin Biyofya. However, says Be'er Yosef, it's possible that the Gemara is meant to be taken as one. These two things complete each other. Sarah seeing Ruach HaKodesh and everybody looking at Sarah, they are to be harmonized. In what way? As we know, in order for someone to merit the level of nevuah, they need to have perfected their midos, and specifically, and we see from the Gemara, the outstanding character trait that needs to be perfected is that of anova, of humility. The person needs to completely subjugate themselves to Ratzon Hashem, because if they're too invested in themselves as their own entity, then they detach themselves ultimately from Hashem and from any possibility of receiving nevuah. Anova is really the pinnacle, in a sense. Now, Sarah clearly achieved this. Socha Baruch HaKodesh. She sees Baruch HaKodesh. That means that Sarah's, her midos are complete. Also the midah of anova. The point is that we would receive added appreciation of how Sarah was able to do this, to remain dedicated to a higher purpose. All of that takes on a new dimension when we are conscious of the fact that everybody always used to look at Sarah. In other words, she was so beautiful. Hakol sochin biyofya. It tends to be that someone who has that type of beauty where everybody looks at them, within the course of time, they start looking at themselves as well. In other words, if they're the object of so much attention from others, it will tend to develop within them also a certain self-focus. That's the sort of thing that would have barred Sarah from ever attaining the level of nevuah, because if she became self-absorbed and self-focused in that way, it would take the focus off all the things that are necessary for nevuah. And therefore, says Be'er Yosef, the correct way to understand these two interpretations of Yiska is to say, although everyone was looking at Sarah, nonetheless, Sarah didn't look at herself. Not in that way. She didn't let it get to her. She didn't let her divert her focus. And she remained goal-orientated in that way to the highest purpose. And she ultimately had visions of Ruach HaKodesh. That's the very interesting biur of the Be'er Yosef. The two Yiskas go together. The two Sochas go together. And with that in mind, says Be'er Yosef, we could explain what Rashi means, or the Medrash quoted by Rashi means, when it says that in praise of Sarah, when she was at the age of 20, it was like she was the age of 7, Leyofi. Meaning, it's not an appraisal of how beautiful she was. Perhaps she was more beautiful at 20 than she was at 7. Most people are. But the point is, it's not a question of how beautiful she was, but how did she relate to that? In other words, when someone's 20 and they're beautiful, so then that can become a whole enterprise and it can detract from other more elevated things. At the age of 7, less so. There's still that lack of self-consciousness, there's still that innocence and that purity and that honesty in a way. In praise of Sarah, she maintained that way of relating to herself even as she developed new beauty to the age of 20. And that's what the Medrash means when it says, at the age of 20, she was like 7. But that is now an issue of attitude, not so much a question of beauty per se, but an issue of attitude. And that's why the Medrash prefaces both appraisals with the words, Yodea Hashem Yemei Tamimim. These are things that are known to Hashem. Anyone could tell how beautiful she is, but only Hashem knows how much is she taken with her own beauty or not in order to decide whether she is deserving of Ruach HaKodesh. So that's a very interesting approach to the very well-known opening words of Rashi, the 100 and the 20 and the 7. I'd like to move from here, of course, to the center of the parsha, which is finding a wife for Yitzchak, and that itself becomes a whole process. And Eliezer conducts his famous test. And it's important to note, just to pause for a moment and observe just how difficult this test would be to pass for a number of reasons. I mean, he's really asking practically not only the impossible, but also something very chutzpahdik, as if to say a complete stranger comes up and asks this girl that she should draw water for him. That itself is already somewhat chutzpahdik, especially as the pasuk says, "Vayaratz el hanara," he ran to her, which means he's hardly collapsing of exhaustion. He jogs up to her, which means he's fully capable of really drawing water himself. It would be considered a kindness if she gives him one of her vessels and says, "Please help yourself and return it when you're finished." To ask her to draw water for him is already a chutzpah, that she should not say yes. to then offer to draw water for all of his camels is just beyond the beyond. It's also true that it's Le'is Erev, the Pasuk says. It was towards the evening. And Eliezer asks that this should have a successful outcome today. Hakreino lefanai hayom. That means time is of the essence. He doesn't have a lot of time. He doesn't have that many chances. And another, maybe rather practical point, which I haven't seen Mefarshim mention, but I'm not exactly sure how many times he could try this anyway, because let's assume the first person, first girl, gives him to drink but doesn't offer his camels. How much can he drink already? When he goes over to the second one, who probably has seen him, you know, drinking his fill the first time, this can't go more than two or three times anyway before he's just simply not capable of drinking anymore. And the camels still haven't had anything to drink. For all these reasons and more, it's a rather tall order. And what shall we say? It's all of this in order to find the future wife for Yitzhak, as if to say, if she wouldn't do this, then she's not for Yitzhak. I mean, it seems to be a very, very high standard. And maybe that's the case. But Rav Yosef Horowitz, that's all, the Alter of Nevada, explains somewhat differently. There's another dynamic here. And that is, we know that Eliezer has something of a conflict of interest in this story. The Medrash gives us some of the background. Eliezer says, "Ulai lo telecha isha lelecha sacharai." Maybe she won't want to come, and that's a very strong maybe, because the Medrash tells us that Eliezer had his own thoughts as to who Yitzhak should marry, namely his own daughter. In the second time, in fact, the word Ulai is written without the Vav. Eli. Ulai really is Eli. Now, Avram says no. Avram says it cannot be. The families can't mix. You're Aror and Yitzhak is Baruch. Okay, it can't be. But amazingly, though, even after having rebuffed Eliezer, Avram still trusts him to find the right one. Which is really how much Avram relies on, you know, the stock that he places in Eliezer's decisions. Eliezer, however, being a faithful servant of Avram, is not sure that he can trust himself. In other words, the question as to whether anyone is good enough for Yitzchak, which he needs to decide, there's a subtext going on the whole time, namely he thinks that he already knows who's the one that's good enough for Yitzchak. So he may look somewhat the iron raw at any potential girl. She may have all the greatest qualities in the world. If you want someone else to be the one, you'll always find a flaw. And he's worried, therefore, that he will be overly critical, judgmental, and disqualify everyone, which he doesn't wish to do. But how can he decide? And therefore, the Alter says that, in a sense, the one decision that Eliezer can make in this situation, which will protect him, is, in a sense, to turn over the whole thing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as if to say, he's going to do a test. It's a test that no one could naturally pass. That's important, because if anyone does, then even Eliezer will know that she's the one. If it stayed within the realms of normalcy, so then Eliezer might say, okay, but maybe there's better, and then he even thinks there's better. And thus, he creates a test which is so almost like impossible, because if someone achieves the impossible, then Eliezer knows that she's the one. And she is protected even from his own criticism. And that's why he uses the expression at the one who says, Shesei Adoni, and also I'll give you a camel, Osahu Chachto. La Adoni, she is the one that you have proven. In other words, once there's proof, nothing I can do about it. As long as it's a matter of judgment, I may judge harshly. Of Soho Chachta, and then my mind will be at rest. And really, this leads us into Eliezer, who's in a sense the central figure of Parshas Chayesara. I mean, he's the one that's discussed the most, but we've noted in the past, and important to recall, he is never mentioned by name. Through the entire parsha, you'll not find the word Eliezer at all. You'll either find Ha'ish, or you'll find Ha'eved, And that then becomes the whole discussion amongst the Mepharshim. When is he Eved and when is he Ish? But he's never Eliezer, because in a sense the entire topic here, the entire story is about Eliezer nullifying his own personal identity in the sense of his own wishes and his own agenda for the benefit of his master. And it's the greatest thing one could say about him, is that he is Eved, and that's how he introduces himself. And I'd like to develop this idea further in terms of how Eliezer is extending himself in order to bring about the best outcome for his master, Avram. And the way that I'd like to do so is by looking through the Parsha. As we know, the story is told twice, once in real time, so to speak, and then the second as it's retold by Eliezer. And that itself is the subject of comment by Chazal, as Eliezer begins to retell the story. So the Medrash quoted by Rashi says, Yofa sichoson shel avde avos, mitaroson shel bonim. You see how the conversation, even, of the avodim, of the fathers, is more beautiful than the Torah of the sons? How so? Look at Eliezer, how much space is devoted to his story. You hear the whole thing, and then the Torah gives the whole thing again. That's another whole column of parchment to tell the story of Eliezer. There's many halachas de oraisa, or mitzvahs that are given one pasuk, or less, not a whole parsha. So yofa sichoson shel avde avos. But still we need to find out why that is. What is so beautiful about the conversation of avde avos? So as we look at the story and then see how the story is retold, and in general it is retold, but that's all the more reason to notice that there are certain changes that happen between the story as it really did occur and between the story as Eliezer then tells it. If we, and therefore we will be focusing on Perek Kapdalet, and we'll note a number of things. There are more, but we'll confine ourselves to a modest list. In Pasuk Dalet, so Pasuk Dalet, here is where Avram says where he does not wish a wife to come from, and where he does wish a wife to come from. It should not be in Pasuk Gimel as it says, Lo tikach isha livni mibno saknani asher anochi yoshev bikirbo. We can't be from the Bno Saknani. Rather, ki el artzi vel malalati telech. Rather, it's got to be from my land and from my birthplace. And that is also now the beginning of a big discussion. Where is Avram's land? Where is he referring to? Where is his birthplace? Where was he born? As far as we know from Rashi, he's born in Orkastim. Eliezer didn't go to Orkastim, he went to Haran. That's quite a discussion in itself. But in any case, he refers to location. El Artsi, the old modality. Now, if we keep an eye on that, but move further to Pasuk Lamed Ches, which is where Eliezer tells the story, this part of the story, Pasuk Lamed Ches, and we'll begin again from Pasuk Lamed Zayin, just to cue ourselves in, by Yashbi Eini Adoni Leimor, he made me swear, Lo Tikach Isha Livni, Mibno Saknani, Asher Anochi Yoshev Barzo, Im Lo El Beis Avi Telech Ve'El Mishpachti. Rather, you must go to my father's house and to my family. So although they're largely similar, nonetheless, it's not a verbatim quote. It's not exactly accurate. Avram, the terms that Avram used were artsi and modality, and the terms that Eliezer used are besavi and mishpachti. What is behind that change? And another, in a sense, more subtle point, but also worth noting, is that as artzi and maladati change to besavi and mishpachti, so also the terms change a little bit. If we look at the beginning of Pasuk Dalet again, and we're going between Dalet and Lamed Ches. So So in Pasuk Dalet, it says, Ki el Artsi. Now, ki, which of course can mean a lot of things, but here, ki means accept. Ki. Accept from my land. In Pasuk Lamed Ches, it states, Im lo el beis avi telech ve el mishpachti. Im lo, if not. Again, largely the same, but not exactly the same. What is the difference in connotation between ki and imlo, and why did Eliezer change? Another interesting difference is when Eliezer asks the question, if we move into Pasuk Zion, when Eliezer asks, what if she doesn't want to come, should I bring Yitzhak back? So Avram says no. And then in Pasuk Zion says, Hashem Elokei Shamayim, that's Hashem will help you. Hashem Elokei Shamayim, Asher Lekochani mibeis avi u'me'eretz miladati, v'asher dibali, v'asher nishbali le'mor, lezarucha etin es aretz hazos, right, Hashem who did all of that for me, which is a good many words, hu yishlach malacho lefanecha, he will send malach before you, and it will be fine, but do not bring Yitzchak there. Okay. And therefore the substance is, can you bring Yitzchak there? No. Hashem will help you. She will come here. If we move to Pasuk Mem, which is where Eliezer again retells this part of the story, says, Vayomer Eli, I asked, should I bring Yitzchak there? No. Hashem asher asalafti lefanav yishlach malacho itach v'tzliach takecha, etc. So what has happened, basically the very lengthy way that Avram referred to Hashem, Hashem Elokei Shamayim, Hashem Lekachani, Mebeis Avi, Meretz Miladati, Vashem Dibali, and all of that, here it gets, in a sense, much curtailed. And it's just Hashem, Asher Esalachti Lefanav, before whom I walked. That's a very, you know, abridged version of what Avram said. Probably the most famous difference in terms of how the story is told by the Torah and how Eliezer tells the story is the order of finding out or of asking Rivka her name and then giving her the gifts. If we take a look in Pasuk Kaf Beis, so we will see that Rivka's passed the test, and then Pasuk Kaf Beis, Vayi Kashe Kilu Hagmalim Nishtos, when the camel's finished drinking. So he takes the ring, two bracelets, asara zahav mishkalam. And yes, and then pasuk kaf gimel, vayomer basmiat, hagidin ali. Right, who are you? So the first thing, reading the psukim on a straightforward level. The first thing Eliezer does is that he gives her the jewelry, and the second thing is to ask her who she is. Whereas in Pasuk Mem Zayin, as he retells the story, Va'eshalosa, Pasuk Mem Zayin, I asked her, Va'omar Bas Mi'at, and she said, Va'temer Bas Besuel Ben Nachor, Asheyodali Milka, and then so first, in his words, he first asked her, and then he gave her the jewelry. The kolze omer darsheni, especially as seemingly the goal of Eliezer is to retell the story. He should be faithful to the story. To start changing things seems to be departing from his shlichus, in a sense. So what is the issue here? What's the dynamic here? And the Malbim, who, as is his way, he goes through the parsha and he notes all of these changes in phraseology. He explains that the foundational point here to understand this parsha and how it unravels is that Eliezer's plans underwent a fundamental reversal or shift halfway through the story. Something happened at a certain point in the story which changed everything for Eliezer. What is that thing? So let us go back to the beginning of this episode. Avram says to Eliezer, do not take from the boast Kanani, rather you must take from, well, from where? So he says, you've got to go El Arzi, El Maladati. You've got to go to my land, you've got to go to my birthplace. Okay, and we then are asking, and specifically, whom within there? Says Malbim, no one specific. It doesn't matter. In other words, Avram knows the nature of the places that he's been. He assesses that the nature of the people in Haran is relatively better than the nature of people in Canaan, coupled with the fact as well that it's far away, and therefore whoever comes back will be, you know, away from the surroundings of her family. But Haran, relatively, is better than Canaan. Where within Haran, whom within Haran? It doesn't matter. Anyone that Eliezer judges is fit for Yitzchak. It could be anyone. Could it be from Avram's family? Could be. Does it have to be from Avram's family? Not at all. What are the qualifications? Very simply, a girl of sterling character who is prepared to come back with Eliezer and marry Yitzchak. And that is that. And moreover, not only does it not necessarily have to be from Avram's family, it could be that the caste of Avram's family is not even appropriate, because they are the high society of Haran, and those types of people tend to make trouble. On the contrary, someone from a more basic background who will be without frills and without demands and without hopefully any of those problems that the nobility can tend to cause. And that's that. And that's exactly why, I mean, just to look at this part of the story at the simplest level, as Eliezer gets to Haran, he goes to the well, and when he gets there, he conducts a test. And he hopes to find the wife of Yitzchak at the well. Except just one moment. If we understand, as perhaps we tend to, that the point is it's always really meant to be going towards Avram's family, as in the end it turned up. So why on earth does Eliezer have this test here? If it's about Avram's family, what he should do at the well is basically what Yaakov did at the well a few decades later. Namely, to stop someone and say, do you know where Bethuel lives? Do you know where Nachor lives? Because I'd like, which is exactly what Yaakov did. Do you know where Laban is? Because at the well, everybody knows where everybody's business and where everybody lives. Okay, so it's a good place to find information. But that's not a place to stop. Except, says Malbim, we understand that Eliezer doesn't feel that he needs to make his way to Avram's family's house. On the contrary, he's exactly where he needs to be to find a wife for Yitzchak, because whoever will pass his test, as he sets it, she's the one. That's all. And on the contrary, someone who draws water from a well is probably more suitable for Avram's family than somebody who sits at home and waits for somebody else to draw water for the well for them. Certainly no one's expecting to find a member of Avram's family there. Which means if she passes the test, that's that. She's the one. Now, everything changes, however, when Hashgacha has decided that the one who passes the test will also be from Avram's family. Okay? Eliezer did not in a million years imagine that the one that passes this test will have anything to do with Avram's family, unless it's the maid of Avram's family. And therefore, as soon as she passes the test, he gives her the jewelry, because she's the one. And we asked, what, you didn't even wait to find out who she is? It kind of doesn't matter what her name is. In other words, it does matter, and he needs to ask, but he needs to ask just to know what to put on the wedding invitation. In other words, Bat Ploni. Okay, so you have to know. But those are details, but they're not qualifications, because he's not in it for Yichus at all, in which case he gives her the jewelry because she's passed. And then he says, firstly, Mazel Tov. Secondly, may I inquire, who are you? And then she drops a bomb And she says she's Rivka, and she's the daughter of Besuel, and all of a sudden he realizes that she's from Avram's family. I mean, he did not see that coming. And therefore, Eliezer now has to act very wisely, in the sense that there is no question that she is the one. I mean, she passed the test. That could not happen unless she's the one. So she is the one. But something else is also very clear to Eliezer, and that is there's no way in the world that he can go and tell her family the story exactly the way it happened. Because in so doing, if he really tells it as it was, they'll run a mile. I mean, they're never going to say yes, because they'll be snubbed. Essentially, he'll tell them the story that, you know, here I was in Haran. It could have been anyone. It didn't have to be you. In fact, if it was someone else, I would have come and gone. You'd never know that I was here. But what do you know? In the end, it turned out to be you. How fortunate you are. They won't take kindly to not feeling that it was about them. I mean, that's families like that, and especially this sort of situation. If they don't feel that it was all about them, so then they will make trouble. And therefore, Eliezer now needs to, in a sense, use his ingenuity as he retells the story to finesse certain elements of it whilst remaining faithful to the story so that they always feel that it was about them from the outset, and in order to gain their consent. So firstly, with regards to the first change again, as he tells the part where Avram says, where should you not take a wife from, and where should you yes take a wife from? In reality, Avram says, not from Canaan, but where should you go? Artia Maladati. Why? Because there's good people there. Anyone specific? No. He cannot say Artzi and Molality because they'll realize that it had nothing to do with them. And thus the first of the changes is Artzi and Molality becomes Beis Avi and Mishpachti. Now that it's become apparent that the one for Yitzhak really is from Avram's family, so then he rephrases it that it was always meant to be about going to my father's household, and here I am, and isn't it wonderful, and it was all about you. The only thing is, there is a certain danger in overemphasizing how it's all about them, because if they are given to feel that they are the only real option for Yitzhak, when you know that you're the only option, so then you can begin to make demands. As if to say, it has to be from Aaron's family, the only one really is Rivka here, and there's no other choice, and therefore Lavan and Besuel, when they hear that, they'll start to think, well, there's no other choice. Okay, so here's how we'd like things to be, and you have to agree, because there's no other choice. And therefore, and it's a delicate situation here, but as Eliezer, in a sense, lays the emphasis on the family, he needs to remove the exclusivity from the family. You see, Avram originally said, it's got to be from Karan. He used the word ki. The difference between the word, the qualifying word ki, as opposed to imlo, is that ki means except, means it's got to be from there. Imlo means unless it doesn't happen. And the point is, because Avram had no interest in anyone specific, but just someone from Haran, it's got to be from Haran, because there's got to be someone there. And thus he was able to say exclusively, because there's yet a pool of choices, exclusively from Haran. But because Eliezer had to narrow the pool to essentially one family, in so doing, he can't say ki, because then he is saying in Avram's words, it's got to be from my family. Says Eliezer, listen, you were the ones who were first thought of, but you're not the only ones. You're not the only option. You are option A, but you're not the only option. And therefore, as he moves in, as he narrows the focus to Mishpachti, he loosens the dependency on them with the words Imlo. Because Imlo means, don't take from Kanani, unless you go to my family, and it doesn't work out. So on the one hand, he's giving them a very warm message, namely, you are option number one. On the other hand, he's giving them a sub-message, namely, you're not the only option, so if you make life difficult, so you may become an X option for Avram's family. Okay. Another thing, says Malbim, that we will very clearly see that Eliezer could not quote verbatim. As Avram originally spoke to him about, he asked, should I bring Yitzhak back? Avram says, no, do not bring it. Hashem will help you. And how does he say Hashem will help you? He says, Hashem Elokei Hashemayim, Asher lekochani mibeis avi, who took me from my father's house, who took me away from those people, from which I can't stop thanking him, and who gave me this land. That's all well and good if you're talking to Eliezer, and the people that he will retell the story are not Avram's family. Except, you can't say that's Avram's family, because when they hear the story, and the only way that they actually feature in the story as the ones that Avram is so grateful to Hashem for having taken him away from, that's hardly the beginning of the relationship he's looking to foster, because Eliezer will say, and Avram said to me, Hashem, who took me away, and here you are, you wonderful people, it's so nice to see you again. They'll balk at that. And that's why Eliezer changes all of that to a much more harmless sounding Hashem, Asher Salati Lefanav, which is, just means that Avram is a religious man, which is not a surprise to them. So he sanitizes that part of the story as well, so that it shouldn't be in any way off-putting for them. And then this brings us to the final issue, which is what about giving her the jewelry and then asking her, you know, what her name is. He reversed the order as well. You see, the major question, in the sense the one difficult point in the story is, how, if it's really true that it was meant to be about Avram's family, how can he explain that he didn't come straight to them, but rather he went to the well and conducted this test? I mean, it could have been anyone. But in reality, that's really true. It could have been anyone at the time, and therefore that's why he did it. But now, retelling the story, and they're made to feel that it was about them, how can he explain that he did this test at the well? The only way is, again, to lay emphasis on the words, Osahu Chachta. He's looking for a clear sign, Min HaShamayim. People always like to have like a simento before they go, as if to say, Eliezer said, I'm on the way. I was certainly on the way, but I thought I'd stop off and find out, you know, to get a sign from Hashem. And needless to say, if it turned out that it wasn't from your family, it wouldn't make a difference anyway. But I just wanted to really things to come in together. That's the only way it can portray the test. But if that's true, then as he reaches the point of the jewelry, he can't say that he gave the jewelry before he found out her name. Because obviously part of the whole thing working out wonderfully is that passing the test, and she's also going to be from Avram's family. And thus, as he tells the story, he says, I asked her first what her name was, and lo and behold, as I expected, she said she was from your family, and then I gave her the jewelry, and here we are. So these are some of the examples of the changes between Eliezer, and it's such an important way of learning the story, because in the most general sense, we say a Torah tells, and then Eliezer tells it again. But that's all the more reason to pay attention to the aspects in which he departs. And moreover, the reason why he does that, and this is really in tribute to Eliezer, and that's why the Medrash says, Yofa sichoson shel abdi avos. You see the beauty of the conversation of abdi avos, because you see what it means for a person to be so devoted and so dedicated to a cause that he holds higher than himself. After all, one could have envisaged a scenario where Eliezer says, listen, I did what I was told. Don't forget, he has his daughter. He has the issue there. And therefore, you couldn't fault him for saying, I'm just going to tell the truth. You can't blame me for telling the truth. It's easier. It's truer. And if it doesn't work out, I'm certainly not at fault. But he would know that they would say no. But on the other hand, to almost free his mind, to allow him to think, well, how can I? He has to think really on his feet rather quickly, to retell the story in a way that it's seamless, but it's effective, and he's faithful to the story generally, but finesses all the points that will have a better outcome for Avram, all the while when he'd really prefer that this not happen. That's Abdi Avos. That's a person, that's Eved Ne'eman. And in a sense, there's a certain beauty there, because as the Mefarshim say, I mean, everyone should really be like that. I mean, everyone should live their life as an Eved to the highest cause, which is Torah. There's a certain beauty there, which, in terms of communicating mitzvahs, You don't need that lengthy. You can get it from a drasha or from one pasuk or from a word. You just need the information. But the, in a sense, the background or the atmosphere of what it means to keep Torah, that you learn from Eliezer. And that really is his enduring legacy. And Chazal picked up on it. So these are some of the comments of Malbim. Again, Kedarko, in a sweeping journey through these psukim and through this parsha. Now, I'd like to conclude by referring to a section at the end of the parsha, which is the burial of Avram, actually, in Perek Kafhei Pasuk Tes. Perek Kafhei Pasuk Tes. So Perek Kafhei is really about the final years of Avram, and then it mentions his passing in Pasuk Ches, and then Pasuk Ches, Vayikberu also, Yitzhak b'Yishmal banav. So Yitzhak and Yishmal, his son, they buried him, El Maras HaMachpela, in Maras HaMachpela. El Sadei Ephron ben Socha, Achiti Asher Apenei Mamre, which was purchased by Avram in the beginning of the Parsha. So Avram passes away, and he's buried by Yitzhak and Yishmal. The Gemara has an interesting comment to make here. It's the Gemara in Maseches Bava Basra and Daf Tet Zayin Amud Beit, and the Gemara says, from the fact that the Pasuk places Yitzhak before Yishmael, you see that Yishmael in the end did tshuva, because he allowed Yitzhak to bury Avram before him. He kind of gave that cover to Yitzhak as if to say he's acting finally as he should be. Now firstly, the Gemara says, well, just one moment. How can you tell from the fact that the Pasuk mentions Yitzhak before Yishmael that it's about Yishmael's behavior? Isn't it possible that perhaps Yishmael did not give any cover to Yitzhak? Perhaps Yishmael, he kind of barged in and wanted to be first. Maybe. The Pasuk doesn't necessarily reflect the hierarchy as Yishmael presented it. Perhaps it's the hierarchy as the Torah considers it, which is, of course, to put Yitzhak first. So the Torah will put Yitzhak first. How do you know that Yishmael put Yitzhak first? That's the interesting shaila. That's a parshanut question. So the Gemara says, the way you can tell is by comparing and contrasting this with the next generation, whereby the burial of Yitzhak, which is referred to in Parshas Vayechi, and then it says Esav and Yaakov buried Yitzhak. Sorry, but the burial of Yitzhak, which is in Parshas Toldos, so it says, Vayikvur, so Esav Yaakov banav. So when Yitzhak passed away, you see the Pasuk mentions Esav first. The Pasuk doesn't rate Esav higher than Yaakov. Why does it mean Esav first? Because Esav took the lead there, because he's never acts like a mensch. And therefore you see that when Esav is acting as Esav, trying to be first, it put him first. Which means that when Yitzhak and Yishmael, Yitzhak is mentioned first, it's because Yishmael allowed him to go first. And thus we see Yishmael did tshuva, finally. Now the question is, which one still needs to ask, even if all of this is correct, even if all of this is true, and Yishmael, in a sense, gave deference to Yitzhak at the, gave the courtesy of being the first one really to bury Avram, how does that tell us that he did tshuva? In other words, it tells you that maybe for once in his life he acted like a mensch. It tells you that maybe he felt Yitzhak, okay, so you go first, I'll go second. Maybe he didn't want to bury Avram. So the Meshech Chochma says, really, we need to ask, what is, we say that Yishmael, and he was a Rasha, and of course there's many ways that you can illustrate that, but how did it begin and what's it all about? Is there any way to really reduce it to a specific point? We find Yishmael's misbehavior being referred to in Parshas Vayera, where it says, Vateira Sara, we read on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, Vateira Sara, Es Ben Hogar Amitzus, Asheyotel Avram, Mitzachek. She saw Yishmael was literally laughing. Okay, now what does that mean? What's wrong with that? Rashi, as we know from the Medrash, Mitzachek has all sorts of terrible connotations, Avodah Zarah and everything, Shichas Domim and all of that. Interestingly, the Sephorno says that, where was he laughing? I mean, the Pasuk is talking about the party, the Mishteh that Avram made, the Yom Hikamelet Yitzhak. Avram made a Vayas Avram Mishteh Gadol B'Yom Hikamelet Yitzhak, or the day that Yitzhak was weaned, they made a mishdeh, and there it says Hagar Sur Yishmael was laughing. What's he literally laughing? What's he laughing about? Says the Sforno, he's laughing about the party that Avram made for his son. And what's the joke as far as Yishmael is concerned? It's like the Leitzani Hador, their joke, where they said Mi Avimelech Nis Abrasara, that Sarah Yitzhak is not Avram's child. He's from Avimelech. That's what the Leitzani Hador says, and Yishmael kind of took it up, and therefore he's laughing at the party. Why is Avram making a party for Yitzhak if Yitzhak is not his son? Now, that's of course a terrible thing to say, but it's worse than that, because the worst person to laugh about Yitzhak, whether Yitzhak is Avram's son, is Ishmael. Because it means, number one, that, or first and foremost, what it means is Ishmael is saying that the only heir of Avram, certainly at that time, is me. He's completely, therefore, sidelining Yitzhak from any connection with Avram. For everybody else, it's damn a joke. But for Yitzhak to say it, he's mamish looking to, for Ishmael to say it, he's looking to push Yitzhak out. And therefore, he will insist that he is the only continuation of Avram. And that's why Sarah says, you've got to get rid of him. She says to Avram, you've got to get rid of him. Goresh es ben hamazah. So you've got to get rid of Hagar and him. Why? She says, ki lo yirash ben ha'amahazos in b'di Yitzhak, for he will not inherit with my son, with Yitzhak. And what is the meaning of those words, he will not inherit? We tend to take those words as a statement of Sarah's. As if it says, I will not be prepared for him to inherit with Yitzhak. I'm not prepared for that. But the Aruch Laner, Rabbi Yaakov Etlinger in his drushes, based on the Sforno, says no, Yishmael will not be prepared to inherit with Yitzhak, because he'll claim that Yitzhak is not an heir at all. Lo Yirash, if you let him here, he's going to establish himself more and more as the only son of yours. And when the time comes to inherit, he will not be prepared to share the inheritance with Yitzhak. He'll say he's the only one. You've got to get rid of him right now. That was what the root really of the sin of Yishmael, and therefore, says Meshech Chachma, we can understand why it is so significant that when Avram passed away and came to bury him, Yishmael allowed Yitzhak to bury him first. That is a complete reversal of his original position, because if he still maintained his original position, which took him on a wrong course, he wouldn't let Yitzhak anywhere near the burial of Avram, because his whole thesis is that Yitzhak is not Avram's son. However, by allowing Yitzhak to go first, Yishmael is saying, I do recognize that you are his son, and moreover, you should be first. That was his tshuva, and with everything else that's involved. Well, this is the Masorah that we have from the Gemara. Rashi quotes it. In fact, Yishmael did tshuva. It's kind of encouraging, but we're still waiting for his grandchildren to follow in his footsteps. We don't hope that it will not be too long before that happens as well. We'll leave it over there.
Gentlemen, we have a minion. We have 10 people.